You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. If you listened to yesterday's episode, you know that Kyle Andrews and I pondered why the Orioles hadn't made a move to sign starting pitcher Alex Cobb. Well, wonder no more. As you no doubt heard, the Orioles made big news yesterday by signing Cobb to a four-year deal. This deal, especially the length, came as a surprise to a lot of people in the baseball world. So we're going to devote today's episode to looking at it. Before news of the deal broke, we had an episode all ready to go. It was an interview with RJ Anderson, who's an MLB writer for CBSSports.com. We'll run that episode tomorrow, but today we decided to focus on the Cobb deal. A little bit later, we're going to be joined by Josh Soroka to talk about the deal. He's host of the popular Baltimore sports podcast, Section 336. But first, I wanted to share with you the reactions of some fellow fans to the news of the Cobb signing. I went to Twitter to ask for reactions. If you're not following us on Twitter, you should be. It's at Locked On Orioles. Here are some of the reactions we got. Dan Jones said, "I'm as excited about a 500-ish team as I was about a 75-ish win team, though now it's more likely the expiring assets are kept for nothing in return. Outside chance at the second wild card, though, I guess." Jake Ness says, "A bit skeptical about how it will play out over 4 years, but it definitely makes this year's rotation a lot better." Marty Fapinski says, "Awesome, my first choice." And here are some reactions around the Orioles blogosphere. Our friends at Camden Depot say, "Cobb is a good addition. It raises the Orioles' playoff probability from 9 to maybe 11%. That's a big leap. If they get strong seasons from guys like Machado and Scope, the team gets more interesting." Mark Brown of Camden Chat writes, "Excitement about signing Cobb is lower from yours truly than those across Birdland. While Cobb has kept a low walk rate, just shy of 6% of batters last year, his strikeout rate has dropped since the Tommy John surgery that cost him all of the 2015 season and most of the 2016 season. The other thing that makes me nervous about Cobb is that, while he had an overall 3.66 ERA that we would have liked very much to have on the 2017 Oriole rotation, that included a 4.72 ERA outside of Tropicana Field." And the guys at Utah Street Report tweet, "For 4 years and $50 to $60 million, gotta think Cobb convinced the O's that he's ready to start throwing the splitter again, right?" That brings up an interesting issue about Cobb's pitch selection. I'm going to read you the Cobb entry in this year's Baseball Prospectus Annual. They write, "In 2017, he slowly worked his formerly devastating splitter, a staple of his arsenal at his peak, back into his repertoire. He leaned more heavily than ever on his sinker and knuckle curve, but the sheer nastiness of that breaking ball and his command of the sinker were enough to make him effective anyway. If he continues to steadily reintroduce the splitter, he might be better than ever, having honed his use of the other two offerings on which he depends." It's a lot to take in, but I think at the end of the day, I agree with Camden Depot when they say, if nothing else, the Cobb signing makes the Orioles of 2018 a lot more interesting than maybe they were going to be. All right, guys, just a reminder before we get to the interview with Josh Soroka, we are now available on Apple Podcasts, so please subscribe, review, and all that stuff. We are also available on Stitcher, and I just found out today that we have been approved for Google Play, so please check us out there. You can also find us on LockedOnOrioles.com, and like I mentioned, you can find us on Twitter, at LockedOnOrioles. And we're always open to emails, so please send those to LockedOnOrioles@gmail.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Josh Soroka. He is the host of Section 336, which is a really good podcast that covers Baltimore sports. It's a lot of Orioles stuff, but they do some other Baltimore stuff as well. They've actually had me on as a guest before, so despite that, I can still say it's a quality podcast. Josh, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I can't believe the terms that we are talking on now.
I know. It's unbelievable. Something positive actually happened for the Orioles. So let's just talk about the basics real quick. From what we can tell, and of course, things are still a little bit in flux with, you know, official, there's no official statement from the team or anything. So we're seeing just media reports at this point. But it seems to be, the last I saw was 4 years, somewhere in the neighborhood of $56 million with deferrals every year. Is that the last thing you saw?
Yeah, that sounds like it's right. We're recording this on in the evening, Tuesday evening, and they're supposed to apparently make it all official tomorrow. But yes, right. All the reports I've seen, 4 years, 56.
Yeah, so by the time people are listening to this, it may very well be official, assuming that he passes the Orioles' infamous physical. Although I saw Rock Kabatko reporting that he heard there's no issues with the physical, that the Orioles are confident in that he's going to pass it easily. So let me just ask you this: what's your initial thought on this, Alex Cobb to the Orioles for 4 years?
I feel like I've been yelling on Section 336 about the Orioles going out and getting Alex Cobb since at least September, if not sooner. Because when you look at the free agents that were out there this year, and you know the Orioles need pitching, he's the one that makes the most sense. He's proven in the AL East. And we all know how pitching in the AL East is different. This guy's done it. He had a 3.66 ERA last year. Meanwhile, the Orioles put up a 5.70 with their rotation. It's just the perfect fit for this team, and it gives me hope that they're being serious now about this one last run with Manny Machado. And then with a 4-year deal, maybe they're trying to keep that window open a little more. Maybe it doesn't close with Manny Machado.
Now, we know that Cobb has dealt with injuries. He had Tommy John surgery in 2015. Didn't come back in 2016. I think just came back, or may have appeared briefly in 2016 at the end of the year. I can't remember, but he mainly came back last year. Was his first full year back. So, do you have any concerns about his history of injuries or anything like that?
I don't. Remember, he also had that brutal injury with the ball that went off his head.
Oh, right, right.
So he's the guy who he's been beat up. So if the Orioles want to find a reason for him to not pass the physical, they can. But I'm not worried. In fact, I'm kind of excited about getting a guy who has gone through Tommy John and been successful about it, and getting him into the clubhouse with guys like Dylan Bundy, who went through it, and Hunter Harvey, who went through it, and to have a veteran guy to show kind of how he rehabbed and how that worked out for him. I'm hopeful that helps them as well with the younger guys.
Now, are you surprised? I know I was, and a lot of other people were, when we saw the years here, 4 years, especially after the Ubaldo thing, it seemed unlikely that the Orioles were going to give a pitcher a 4-year deal. And based on what happened this winter, just in baseball in general, it didn't seem like anybody was going to go 4 years. I mean, Jake Arrieta only got 3 years. Lance Lynn only got a year. Were you surprised that it was this long a deal?
Yeah, I'm very surprised. I am not surprised about the price. I knew that to convince a pitcher to come pitch in Baltimore, you have to overpay. You have to overpay to get them to come back into the AL East. And I know that you weren't going to get a pitcher for 1 year because you're not going to try to bounce back your career pitching in Camden Yards. So I thought 2 to 3. 4 years is a surprise to me because I feel like we're at this crossroads with this team where we're not sure what goes past this year. All this offseason, we wanted the Orioles to make a decision. Are we going to rebuild or not rebuild? And we kept saying we want to go at it one more year and really go at it. To sign this guy for 4 years, Alex Cobb is not necessarily the type of guy you keep around while you're rebuilding. So it's interesting to see, are they going to try to keep going? And are we going to then get to see, now that they've got the pitching established with Cobb and Gausman, Bundy, Hunter coming up, Cashner is 2 years, I believe. Now that they've got pitching lined up, if they'll then talk to Scope about an extension, or if that's gone. It's very interesting to now see what it looks like past this year, because the rotation's been such a problem for so many years. And now we can say the rotation is no longer one of the worst in baseball.
Yeah, that's I guess damning with faint praise in a sense, right? Is that we're not competing to be the best, but we maybe aren't the worst at this point.
Well, and when you look at this team, you don't need to have the best rotation. You've got a really good lineup, and you've got the potential to put up runs. You've got one of the better bullpens in baseball. So we've always asked for a good rotation. I think we've got a good rotation now.
Just before I came in here to record, I saw a tweet from our friends at Camden Depot, and it said basically that this means the Orioles are projected to go from, I think it was like from 72 wins to 74 wins or something, and like they've increased their playoff odds from 9% to 11%.
Right.
And I guess that's a way of maybe trying to temper expectations a bit. I mean, we don't want to be unrealistic here. We're not getting, a Cy Young winner, but certainly I think for Orioles fans, this is a step up from what we have right now. And that's why people are excited about it, not necessarily that it's going to have a huge impact in and of itself, but that it's a sign that they're at least going for it, like you said.
Yesterday, we were talking about Mike Wright Jr. being in this rotation. I mean, there's still lots of questions with the Orioles. You still got a question if Tillman can bounce back, if Gausman and Bundy can build on what they're supposed to be. But this is a big sign of the Orioles that we're not rebuilding. We're not giving up. We're going to try to win. And all right, you can say that projection puts us up to 74, 76 wins. I think it puts us a little closer to 80. And I think that really, as Orioles fans, we always talk about Orioles magic, where things click. And I think when you've got a rotation like this, there's a chance for magic, and that's all I really want as a fan.
Yeah, and I think what we're talking about is competing for a wild card spot, realistically. Yes. I don't think anybody thinks the Orioles are going to be able to beat the Yankees in the division, or even the Red Sox, for that matter. So maybe we're talking about the second wild card. But, you know, the second wild card is not nothing. And, we all experienced the Orioles of 1998 to 2011 when they were never relevant, you know, rarely even, you know, had good first halves. You know, they were below 500 every year. So to think that you could even be competing for a wild card is something. And I see a lot of analysts sort of dismiss that as, you know, it's fool's gold and it's not worth it. And I get that. But on the other hand, I mean, if you have a team that you know, you know what losing is like, competing for a wild card is something, I think.
Yes, it is. And you've also got to remember the Orioles for the past 5 years have surprised analysts. And yes, last year they fell apart in September, and then it made all the analysts look good with their numbers. But even a lot of these Fangraphs and people who are doing all the analysis, they don't know how to quantify that Buck Showalter and the Orioles do something different, and they don't know if it's credit to the clubhouse, if there's a mindset, if it's coaching, what it is that they surprise these numbers, and they tend to go better than they're projected. And I think this year, especially when you get the addition of Alex Cobb, when you've got Manny Machado going in for a contract year and really excited about his shortstop position, you've got opportunities for that Orioles magic. And I think it's nice to have a rotation I can trust, and that's all I want.
So how much do you know about, like, Alex Cobb, the pitcher? What can we expect from him? What are his best pitches? You know, what kind of results does he get?
I don't have those numbers in front of me. What I do know is that he's the AL East pitcher, so he's faced the same teams that our guys have struggled with, where we've got – We always like to say, oh, well, we have to face the Yankees and the Red Sox, whatever, 16 times a year. Alex Cobb had to do that down in Tampa. And he didn't have to do it in Camden Yards, but he faced these teams, and he did really well against these teams, better than our rotation. And that's where we're going to see the improvement.
Where do you see him slotting? I mean, obviously, I think he's going to need to get into shape, so I don't expect to see him ready by opening day. But once they get the rotation going, is he the number two guy? Is he the number three guy? Where do you slot him in?
Yeah, there's no way he's ready for opening day. I think he might be ready, I don't know, end of April, maybe 2-3 weeks into the season. And at that point, you know how Buck is. He mixes things up with off days and everything. You would think that he slots in probably number three. You're going to probably start the season with Gausman, then go Bundy, and then Cashner, Tillman, and Mike Wright Jr. for a couple weeks. And I would assume that, depending on how off days, that you'll slide him in after Bundy.
So you think fifth slot goes then to Wright or to Tillman? Who are we going to see in that slot?
They've got 2 weeks to decide.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be whoever is shining and go with the with a warm hand, go with the guy who's doing well.
Now, if we had talked yesterday, your assessment of the Orioles would have been one thing. We're talking today after this, your assessment's another one. What has changed for you? Are you confident that this can be a team contending for a wild card slot, or do you think that's still going to take everything breaking right for them?
I am generally pretty positive about the Orioles' outlooks, and definitely more than the national reporters, I think, because I see this team all the time. And going into yesterday, as we recorded this week's Section 336, I was like, okay, if everything clicks, they got a chance for 500, but probably not a wild card. I think Alex Cobb puts them up there. into the shot of that second wild card. Because, yes, the Yankees and the Red Sox, let's say they take, they're going to take the AL East, they're going to take the first wild card slot, and then it's really going to be about some of these other teams like the Twins, the Indians, and get and competing with them. And I think we have a good shot at outlasting them for the wild card.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things people have to keep in mind, too, when you're looking at this, is that the second wild card in the AL seems to me to be pretty soft. I mean, you know, you've got, like I said, you mentioned the Yankees and Red Sox. You know, it looks like the Indians are probably going to, you know, win the Central again. Looks like the Astros are going to win the West again. And so then it comes down to a number of teams, like you said, like the Twins, maybe the Angels. But there are a lot of teams that aren't really even trying to compete. So maybe that second wild card only takes 85 wins, you know, and that's maybe realistic.
Right. Exactly. It's 84, 85 wins is going to get you that wild card slot. So it's tough to, because we do have the Red Sox and the Yankees, you want to compare yourselves to them all the time. And we're not. Last year it took 85 wins to get that second wild card. So that's within reach with this team.
Now, let me just ask you while I have you on, what are your thoughts about the catching situation? I know that there's been a lot of talk about that lately. Is Chance Sisko going to get a chance? Is Caleb Joseph going to get the majority of time? Or are they going to split it, which is what I think a lot of people seem to think is makes sense to give both of them a chance there.
I think they're going to split it. I think you want that. You want Joseph. You want the veteran. I would really go with the pitchers and say, hey, who do you like throwing to? And go with that, because it's really about keeping those pitchers comfortable. I know Buck likes to say, well, the catcher touches the ball 200 times a game at the plate and behind the plate, and maybe only 3 to 4 times at the plate, so he can make a bigger impact, and he values defense, and that's where he leans on Joseph a lot. And we hear a lot about Sisko and needing work behind the plate, but the truth is I don't really think you make that much of a defensive impact as a catcher. If you're receiving the ball properly, unless you're some pitch framing, he can probably work on. But really, he doesn't have a whole lot to make an impact, and his bat is playing well. So I think they're going to want to bring him up this year, and they're not going to want him to just sit on the bench. He's not going to be your Sunday catcher, because if that's the point, they'd leave him down at Norfolk to get him more acquainted with catching and defense. So I think you're going to see splits. And if you do the righty-lefty split, that ends up with Sisko at the plate more.
And finally, the thing I wanted to ask you about is, going back to Rock Baca, saw some of his reporting that indicated that Brady Anderson was the guy who really got this deal going, and he had been talking to Cobb really for a while. Is this yet another indication that Brady Anderson is going to be taking over for Dan Duquette officially once the season is over, do you think?
I think that's what we got to hope as fans, because I think what it shows is that Brady Anderson has the ear of Peter Angelos, and we knew that. I think there's still very weird stuff about Brady Anderson and the fact that he has a locker in the locker room that he goes out and works out with the guys, and that's all great. And because of that, they might always keep him as special counsel or whatever his title is. But clearly, he wants to be the next GM. He's in there talking to these moves, making these moves, and I want to know if he would have that same type of control and be able to do these same deals if he was the GM, or if he's going and talking to these guys as a former player, working it out. And then he's got the ear of Peter Angelos like no one else, and that helps a ton. There's no way Dan Duquette gets this deal done without Brady Anderson. And I don't think it's because of Brady talking to Cobb. I think it's because of Brady talking to Peter.
Yeah, I think that's right. It seems like he really is the guy who Peter Angelos trusts above anybody else, which is odd, because, you know, Dan Duquette has been his guy for a while, and he even kept him from taking another job. But it seems like, I don't know, maybe that was the breaking point in their relationship, but it seems like things have been a bit strained since then, at least.
Yeah, but no matter what, we still got to put this deal on Dan Duquette, and we got to give Dan Duquette even more credit for getting this deal done in the Peter Angelos era. People love to hate on Dan Duquette, but he's done a really good job with what he has to work with.
All right, well, I agree. Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.